Everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of season 10 of Movie Around Midnight, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today, who is 1 year and 1 day older than he was yesterday, is Joe Amodei, the CEO of Virgil Films, an Emmy Award-winning director, producer, and distributor. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I've actually been hijacked for like the whole week.
I'm glad that you allowed me to hijack.
I'm only halfway through. I didn't even change my shirt from yesterday. I mean.
And I didn't do it at that point. Yeah.
Nope. Not at all. Nope. No, we weren't moving down a train track or anything like that.
Nothing like that. Nothing at all.
So this might be a stupid question. I should probably know this.
No such thing.
Pelham 123. 123 is the stop. What is the 123 mean?
123 is the time that it left the Pelham station.
Okay. That is the time it left the Pelham station.
All right. That's right. It left at 123. And okay. We talked about this, I think it was last week, that after this movie came out, they never used they never had a train leave Pelham at 123, either AM or PM, because of the fear, you know, of the perception of it. You know, so you might have like a Pelham 124.
That's great stuff.
But yeah. Exactly.
Cool.
Yes. So minute 18 begins with Marino noticing something else and ends with Coral continuing to keep trying. So, you know, we left things off yesterday where, you know, Kaz and his team are all looking very attentively at the board behind them to see what's going on. And at this point, Marina calls out and goes, "Hey, it's moving." And we see a light move, which it's great. I love the way that they show this to us because, you know, like I'm sure you've seen all the, old Star Trek TV shows and stuff like that, where you just have all these blinking lights and stuff like that mean absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
But they've done it here in a way that this doesn't mean nothing. It means everything. And we get to see the technology. And again, we're basically reaching across time back 51 years, seeing what their technology looked like. You know,
we're sitting in the room with them. Yeah, we're right there.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing just a light flick off and another light flick on and like, hey, it's moving. And, you know, the tracking devices that they had on these trains at the time, make it scary when you think about what type of tracking devices they have on all of us on our cell phones, you know, 50 years later. If they had that technology then, who knows what they got now?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, it's I don't recall. This is a perfect example of remakes. I know we talked at length yesterday about remakes, but I don't recall the scenes in the control room in the last remake of this movie.
Because the last remake of this movie, they changed it, and then Garber's not a detective. Garber is the guy in the control room, but it's a much larger control room because everything is taking place in the control room, which again is one of the things I don't like about that movie.
Yeah,
because first of all, Matthau's not in it, but Denzel isn't able to play Matthau, so they decided to just make him the he's Corell or he's Kaz or whatever it is, and it just doesn't work as well.
He's Denzel.
Exactly. Denzel is great. I'm not saying he's not great, but
phenomenal. You know, yeah. I love watching.
Sometimes Denzel just plays the same Denzel. And that's what I see when I watch Pelham 123. And that when we talked the other day about Matthau in all of his different roles over the years, he rarely played the same type of character. You know, he was very good at morphing himself.
So, and he played heavies. He started out as a heavy.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I spoke about the Kentuckian, but he did a lot of television work. He did Alfred Hitchcock. He did, and in most of those roles, he was a bad cop or, bad town sheriff. I remember a great Alfred Hitchcock episode where he's the town, evil town sheriff. And I think he made a movie called Gangster Story. But yeah, and then, along came Billy Wilder.
Right, but also one of the things that is very in some ways baffling when you look at someone like Walter Matthau, he doesn't fit in with the Hollywood look, I guess you can say.
Oh, no, he looked at I used to have an Uncle Harry. God rest his soul. He was our Walter Matthau. And as he got older, he really turned into Walter Matthau.
Exactly, but you see, that's the thing. It's like, but he's so great in everything that he does that they overlook that, which is perfect. And and that says so much more about what type of actor he was.
You're sitting in front of the IMDb. What is Matthau's real name? It's a
Oh,
Russian.
it's a Russian Jewish name.
Yeah. That is the name he is billed as in Earthquake, the disaster movie.
Right. Okay. So his
I
name
think.
is.
Once you tell me the name, I'll be able to tell
No, it
you. I
actually says
believe.
his name is Walter Jake Matthau.
Wow.
Doesn't say what
Wow.
his.
I was under the impression it was this long Russian Jewish name. Wow. Okay.
Oh wow! Did you know that the voice of Homer Simpson is based on an impression of Matthau?
I did not know that, but now that I know it, it makes total sense.
Exactly. It really does.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, I do not see anywhere on IMDb that it says that he
Yeah.
has a different that he has a different birth name.
Wow.
Maybe it'll say like what his parents' names were, and that would say something more about that. But yeah, I don't know. It's really strange.
Yeah.
No, his father's name was Milton Matthau.
There you go.
So yeah, his parents were originally from Lithuania. Sorry, his father. Sorry, his mother was from Lithuania. His father was from Russia. He was an electrician in Kiev. Yeah, but it doesn't mention anything about names here. But
Yeah.
if you're saying that he played a different character that he's credited
He had a
as
cameo,
in
uncredited
Earthquake.
cameo in
The
the
Earthquake
disaster
also
movie.
came out in the same year as this. It came out in 74. So
Earthquake?
okay, so he was credited there as Walter
There you go.
Matuchenskayaski.
I'm sure that was a pun.
Yeah.
Because nobody, it didn't even look like him. Nobody even knew he was in the movie
He
until
was a
all of a sudden you're
drunk.
like,
He played a drunk
a
in that movie.
drunk. Yeah.
Okay,
Wow.
interesting.
Now, we've been to his grave site in LA, and it's interesting that he's buried, him and his wife Carol buried right in the same section within feet from Lemon and Wilder.
Wow.
And Lemon's tombstone is imagine a tombstone and at the top it says Jack Lemmon and at the very bottom it says in. So when you're looking at the tombstone, it's like a movie credit, Jack Lemmon in, and then there's the ground, the
That's
grave.
wow. He's in the ground. Interesting.
And then Billy Wilder is Billy Wilder and his wife, and then it says nobody's perfect. The last line from Some Like It Hot.
I think Billy Wilder lived. He died last between the three of them, didn't he? Or
Yeah,
did
he
Lemon?
did. Yeah, he did.
I mean, Matthau was the first to go of the three. That I know. Because he passed in 2000. So I know the
Lemon
other
was pretty
two.
quickly afterwards, I think.
Yeah,
Not
he
that
might have
long
been.
after.
Well, he was in. think one of his last movies was the oh, what was the golf one with Will Smith?
The Bagger Jones.
Bagger Vance, Bagger Vance, right?
Bagger Vance, yeah. Bagger Vance, yeah.
Right.
Yep. Great actor.
So Lemon passed away in 2001. You're right. Okay, it wasn't that long afterwards. June 27th, 2001, and Matthau passed away July 1st, 2000. It was less than a year between the two of them.
Yeah, I remember him being pretty close.
And Wilder was, I think, like in was it 2006 or was it even later than that? Nope.
He's
Hey,
pretty old.
Wilder was 2002.
Oh, was he really?
March 27, 2002. So within 2 years, all three of them died, which I guess sort of makes sense of why their graves would be close.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't just a coincidence. It just happened to be that they died within each.
They bought plots. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a very famous cemetery where a lot of celebrities are buried throughout the entire. It's the same cemetery that Marilyn Monroe is buried in, so it's visited a lot by people, fans.
Including Joe Amade as well.
Including Joe Amedee. I've been there quite a few times.
Right. So at this point, they're looking at the lights slowly moving, and then Kaz goes, "For Jesus Christ's sake, the dumb bastard's moving backwards."
Yep.
Marino says, "Hey, look, he left the front car behind." And then Kaz goes, "The goddamn board must be busted."
They still don't even
No.
think that something could be happening.
Why would they think that? There's no reason for
No
them to
reason.
think that.
There's no reason.
Yeah,
Wow.
but again, it's great that they're able, just with this technology from 1974, to know that they detached one of the cars. That,
He's moving backwards. Yeah.
which makes sense. No, again, first of all, the fact that he's moving backwards, and the second part is the fact that they know that they've been disconnected because there's now a gap between of them. But as I was starting to say, it makes sense because of the danger that if you just have a car sitting on a track, you really have to worry about that.
Yeah,
So
because there's other trains coming.
that's right. That's right. And as they're talking, they let us see that the train where it's slightly moving away from moving backwards. And then we're back in the control center, and then we get Marina says, "Wait, he stopped again." And Kaz turns to him and goes, "Well, stopped is better than backwards at least." So
And there's, I mean, it's just two guys looking at the board,
that's
and
right.
they're like, all right, we don't really get what is happening, but at least we know what's happening.
Correct.
And oof, and they're kind of talking to each other like, we'll find out why, and then we're gonna cream the guy,
That's right.
because he's really screwing up right now. But I think also there is a slight little bit of a, well, this better be fixed,
Right. But what I like about this fact is that they use this perfect situation to explain to us things that are going on also, because we can't tell if the train's going forward or backwards. So they're explaining to us that we saw the trains get uncoupled, but that's it. And
Oh,
then
yeah,
now we're
that's it.
seeing one drift backwards, and then as the minute continues, we see that they're actually getting ready to get off of this part of the train. And Green comes out of the cab, and Bud turns to him and goes, "Jesus Christ, what was that?" And he goes, "What was what?" And he goes, "I didn't know these things went backwards." And he mumbles to him, "Now you know." which is a nice jab at him, because I mean, we know, because we learned this just less than 15 minutes ago, that Bud is brand new here also. You know, he's a cadet, I guess you can say, of doing this type of stuff. But you know, you'd think they would have taught him that trains can go backwards.
You would think that he would have already known it before he even got the job, that trains can go backwards, because
That's it.
we've seen them go backwards on TV. And
Correct. So yeah, I don't
but
know.
are they rolling backwards, or are they moving on their own backwards? I don't.
My impression is that because Green asked for all the various keys, he actually moved it backwards. He didn't just let it drift.
I didn't get that. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Hey,
Yeah, I
because it
didn't
makes
think
sense.
that.
Because
Yeah, it could have.
the idea here is again, spoiler for anyone who hasn't watched this movie. Okay, the idea here is not to harm any of the people on these cars.
No.
So, you know, let's put them a little distance away. We only need the, I don't know, 15, you know, hostages that are in the first car, and that's it.
This car. Yep.
So yeah, I like the way they do it. And then Bud turns to Brown and goes, "Would you mind telling me what you gentlemen are doing?" And Brown just says, "Yeah, I would." Which is such a great line for him to just throw that back at him. You know, you gotta give a lot of credit for Bud, for being very naive and actually asking the question. But you know, he got what he deserved with that response. You know, by asking. You know, it's the whole idea that you know, can I go to the bathroom? I'm sure you can. May I?
Right. Yeah.
Know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's more or less what he's saying here, because he goes, "Would you mind telling me?" Actually, yeah, I do mind telling you.
Yeah.
So, no, I won't.
Yeah, he's just a little bit, and that's the rapport that has been going on between them and these characters, wisecrackers and things like that between them. And it's just building, again, building the character line after line.
Exactly. So they're getting off the train, and then the guy who Gray threatened last week, you know, this older gentleman, older black gentleman, he gets up and he says, "Would you mind telling me what you gentlemen are doing?"
Exactly.
And
Yeah. He's the guy in the coat.
then he responds to him and says, "Yeah, I would."
Yeah,
So
exactly.
yeah, the guy is very gutsy with what he's asking for here. And you know, he then just sits right back down, very confused as to what's going on. And you know,
Well, these people are
they
just worried about getting to their next destination at this point. They
that's
still,
right.
they're wondering what's going on. Something
That's right.
broken.
And then the three of them, you know, Green, Brown, and Bud walk towards the train, and it's a considerable distance, the difference between, you know, these two trains. So he did
Yeah,
move
it's not
them
a
back
couple feet.
pretty, you know, it's not just a couple feet, it's pretty far. And then they climb up into the first car, and Brown hands his flower package to Gray, who takes it. And then you know, we see a whole bunch of we see the kids, you know, the two boys laughing and playing as everyone enters into the train. And again, I've mentioned this before, but I love the shot where we see the two windows. We see the window in the cab, which has Blue and the conductor, you know, Denny Doyle, and then we see on the right-hand side, you know, Green walking towards them with the kids playing. So it happens to be a great shot, the way that they do that. And then we hear over the radio, "Come in, Palom 1-2-3, come in." And that's how this minute ends.
They still haven't gotten back to him. They still haven't answered.
Nope, not at all. So is there anything else you want to talk about in this minute?
No, I'm good. We're covering it all.
All right, excellent. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hijack Hump Day, where my guest will give their top five movies featuring some kind of hijack. So
You know, it's
once
funny
again,
when
why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
it's hard because the best hijacked films deal with very hard subjects. So I'm just going to go through them, starting with the Great Train Robbery, the 1903 version, because it's the first version of a hijack on a train in Fort Lee, New Jersey, in the woods, and filmed in the Pine Barrens. And it's Edwin S. Porter director, and it's one of the first films, if not the first film, to tell a story in sequence, even though it's only 14 or 15 minutes long. But it changed the direction of the art form that we now love. As antiquated as it is, it's still very powerful. And then you can go to the Great Train Robbery, starring Sean Connery and Michael K is it Caine? No, Sean Connery and
No, and
Sutherland
right. Donald Sutherland, right.
and Donald Sutherland, which is just a great caper, a great entertainment film. I would put that as number four. There's a film, it's a guilty pleasure because it's so bad, it's good. Again, at the height of the disaster movies, or maybe in the 70s, maybe getting a little bit towards the end of that phase because the films had gotten pretty bad, but there's a movie called Skyjacked with Charlton
Okay.
Heston and Yvette Mimieux.
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's just entertainment. And then the last two, there is no, I'm not gonna, I would put Flight 93. I'm sorry, I would put United 93, the narrative, with Nicolas Cage, as number two, and Flight 93 as number one. Why do I forget his name? The Greengrass film.
No, the Greengrass one is United 93.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting it mixed up then. Yeah, the Greengrass film would be number one. I had an experience. Actually went to the premiere of that film in New York City. And was at the Ziegfeld, and walking into the theater, across the street from the theater, were a gang of people picketing the film, with signs saying that it was all fake. And that, the
Oh, wow.
government had blown up the buildings, blah, blah, blah. And they were screaming, and you couldn't do anything because they have every right to do that. And then, but inside the theater, the entire balcony of the Ziegfeld were family members. And the last 5 minutes of that film, and to this day, I remember the shrieking, and the wailing and crying so loud, in that at the end of that film, that we all have certain experiences in movies that we remember forever. And this is probably the number one experience. And I went with a friend of mine. He was on one end of the theater, and I was on the other because we couldn't get seats together. And we met, after the film was over, and we just looked at each other and find me the closest bar that I can just have three or four scotches in a row from what we just sat through.
Right. Have you seen the movie since then?
No.
Okay.
On purpose.
It's one of my all-time favorite movies. It's amazing, and I've seen it probably more times than I probably should have.
He's
And
such a good director. He is. And nobody knows who he is. I mean, he's such a good director.
I mean,
Don't you?
when I was doing Saving Private Ryan, so one of my guests that I got to via you was Corey Johnson,
Sure.
who's in the movie, and
Yeah.
he talked about that, and he talked about the experience, and he said that it's one of the most powerful experiences he's ever had as an actor, being in that movie and watching that movie and getting in touch. And meeting with the families and stuff like that, but he said, but he doesn't talk about it.
Yeah.
It's not something that he's able to talk about. But and I completely understand, from that perspective.
It's a thing that it's our imagination. We all, no one was there, so nobody knows exactly what happened. We only, came up with some kind of a timeline of the
Correct.
last 10 minutes of that flight. So, but he was able to put that what we all think happened onto the screen in
And he
such a.
puts us, and he puts us on the plane with them.
We're on the plane, man. We're in the cockpit. I mean,
That's right.
it.
The fact that the movie starts off from telling various stories of that day, but once it focuses on the stuff that's going on the plane, it doesn't deviate from it at all. It just stays
Doesn't
on the
deviate from
plane.
it. It just stays on the plane, never leaves the plane.
Never leaves the plane at that point.
Yeah. So that would be, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, that would be the best hijacking. And there won't be anyone better.
Correct. Okay.
So anyway, there you go.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Sure.
So once again, we will play the daily game of Name That Remake, and hopefully it will not be something that we talked about earlier this week.
Ah, okay.
But it could be. You never know.
It could be. It could be.
And the wheel is spinning and spinning and spinning, and we'll see what movie it comes out to. And I, oh my God. Okay. Joe, I don't know how this is happening. The original movie came out in 1925, and the remake came out in 1956. I'm not telling you anything else about the movie. Can you tell me what movie it is?
1920. Oh, is it the Ten Commandments?
Yes, it is.
Three for three, baby. I'll take the easy ones. That's
It's
unbelievable.
one we talked about earlier this week. I can't
Oh, we
believe
sure did. We did. Yeah. Wow.
And can you think of a way of describing that movie without without it being too blatant? I don't
The
know. I
silent
can't.
version or the 56 version?
Either, because again, it's the story of
Ten
the
Commandments is the
Moses.
story of Moses. I mean,
That's right.
and Charlton Heston with a long beard. I mean,
Yes.
Ten
And
Commandments is a long film.
yes, but it's still very enjoyable to watch.
It's very enjoyable to watch. I prefer Ben-Hur, but it's very enjoyable to watch.
Why you don't have to prefer one or the other. It's
That's
they're both great.
meaning I would love to sit through Ben-Hur again in a theater. I don't know if I would
I
do
would
that.
watch either of those in the theater without a problem.
Would you?
Yes, if I had the opportunity, but I don't.
Right.
I just get to read the story of one of them in the Bible if I want to.
That's true. You're right.
It's a little different
Little
without
bit.
Charlton Heston. A little bit
Yeah.
different, but
Yeah.
Now I gotta say, the when the wheel was spinning, it almost
Right.
stopped on Pelham 1, 2, 3, and then
Oh, you're kidding.
it moved slightly. So somebody will probably get Pelham 1, 2, 3 this season, but
Well, maybe it'll be me tomorrow.
maybe you never know.
You never
You never
know.
know. That's right. Okay, so Joe, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Joe Amade?
They can find me at virgilfilms.com or my email. Joe at virgilfilmsent.com. That would be me.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.